Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game offs on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app right now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. Hello, everybody. You know what? I still don't have a catchphrase. I never probably am going to have a catchphrase that grabs people to start the show, and it is what it is. I'll tell you one thing I do hate, and that's doing ad reads. And I'm getting made fun of on Twitter a lot for the WynnBET ad read that comes out at the top. I'm telling you right now, guys, girls, I am no control over that. But anyway, hope you're all doing well. Welcome to Talking Buffalo Podcast. I'm Patrick Moran. By the way, casual Friday, of course. That means I'm joined, as always, by my buddy, noted hockey, Joe Yernan. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I think you found a good way to make sure you never get an ad read ever again by just absolutely trashing
Ad read. They're not listening anyway. WynnBET is don't get me wrong, it's an awesome thing, an awesome site if you're a gambler. I just hate the sound of my own voice. I hate the sound of my voice. It's the same thing over and over. And it's the way it sounds. Arizona, Colorado, the way it starts. It's the first thing you hear for the last, what, month now? Every time you turn on this podcast, man. Anyway.
Sorry, it just cracks me up. You're just like, man, I hate doing these ad reads. Like,
Everyone out there.
That's me your radio ads. Flashbacks where I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to get screamed at so bad.
Yeah, but when you're on radio, you just read them and you pitch about them like I do. That's the fun part about having your own podcast. You do whatever the hell you want. If I lose the business, I lose the business. Anyway, by the way, so this drops on Friday, but we are actually taping it on Thursday. So I wanted to make sure that I took a quick minute here and, you know, wished everyone out there a happy Veterans Day. Everyone out there who served, who has served. It's always been one of my favorite holidays. You know, I put a post up on Facebook, and everybody does, you know, or Twitter or whatever, you know, thanking everyone, you know, for the service. I meant it. It's even going back to being a kid, Joe, I'm telling you now, I was afraid to join the military. And there's so many great professions in this world. You can become a teacher, you can become a scientist, all this stuff that you can learn with hard work and skill and dedication. You cannot be in the military if you ain't got guts. And you can't teach guts, man. You either have it or you don't have it. And that's not to say people who haven't joined the military, you know, it's because they're gutless. That's not what I'm saying whatsoever. What I am saying is that to join the military, you do have to have some balls if you're a man and guts, whatever, if you're a woman. I just never had it. And even going back to being a kid, I knew I didn't have it. So for that, many reasons, but for that reason alone, I've always been really grateful to the military. So it's always been one of my favorite holidays, low key one.
I've got friends that have served, you know, I've got a couple friends that were in Iraq, after 2001, family that were all in the military. Like, you know, my one uncle was in the Air Force. My grandfather was in the Navy. My great uncle was in the Army. Like, he fought in World War II in Europe. Like, he was in like Northern Africa and Italy, and he might have served under Patton, like, which is crazy to think. But right? Like, I mean, his picture's hanging up in the the Veterans Hall in North Troy, New York. And he never it was like the classic, like, you know, grandpa age military guy where he never talked about serving, never talked about being in it, never talked anything about it. And then so, like, after he passed, and like they had a little get together at the Veterans Club, and I see his picture there. I go, wait, is that Uncle Don? Like, yeah. I go, he's got a chest full of medals. Like, what did he do? And they're just like, oh, you never knew? It's like, no, he never said anything. But yeah, when it comes to military, man, I grew up a fat kid. There was no way I was going to end up in the military. Like, that was never an option. I was like, I got to run. I can't run. You gotta give me a gun. I can't handle a gun. Get out of here, man.
It takes a lot of discipline. And again, it's just knowing when, whether, I don't know, you're 18 years old, 21, 25, whatever age it is, when you sign up, whether whatever branch of service it is, you know what you're getting into to an extent. And you also know that at any given time, you don't know what your future is going to hold. Mm-hmm. You may end up in another country fighting for your country. You might end up in this country defending your country. It's just, it's just such a courageous thing, man. And, I'm really grateful. So anyway, even though it's not Thursday anymore and people are listening to this on Friday, it was important to me to just, take a minute. Do you know the term DABDA? Do you know what that means?
DABDA?
Yeah, it's a psychological term. It's like the five stages of grief. Now, typically that's reserved, you know, like somebody loses a loved one or a job or something. It's called DABDA. And for everyone out there who doesn't know what DABDA stands for, again, it's five stages. It's denial. And these are supposed to be in order. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then ultimately acceptance. Mm-hmm. So five stages, DABDA. Most people who watched that Bills game last week, I think they're at that the final A stage. I think they're at acceptance now and just ready to move on. We're taping this Thursday, man. It's been 5 days, dude. I should be in that acceptance stage, but I'm not. I'm still kind of in the depressed portion. I'm still really annoyed and depressed about how bad this football team looked last week. And I think I'm concerned. Well, I'm concerned about the loss, but I'm not so much concerned about the loss in the big picture. Cause you know this, I mean, you cover hockey, you've been around sports your whole life. Good teams play, come out, shit the bed, come out flat and lose to horrific teams. That should never happen. I mean, like, look at the Sabres the last couple of years. No NHL team should have ever taken the ice and lost to the Buffalo Sabres. And they did, sometimes in very ugly fashion. That shit happens. I'm over that. I was over that by Monday afternoon. What I'm not over and what I'm still concerned about is this offensive line. This offensive line is not good. For Brandon Bean, for all the great moves he's made as general manager, and I love Brandon Bean. It's not a Brandon Bean, you know, bashing segment here, but the offensive line is not good. The guards are terrible. They're one of the worst. I looked it up on Pro Football Focus, PFF, and I don't go by them for a lot of shit, but fifth lowest offensive guard rating in the league. And it sounds about right, man. They made some mistakes. They let some quality guards go. We've seen it. Wyatt Teller traded to Cleveland. Guy just got a monster contract. They traded him, got a fifth round pick. Quinnen Spain, they gave an extension to. Then all of a sudden he got benched, and a couple weeks later he got cut. He's been awesome with Cincinnati. Those are two great guards, and you look around like, oh, they could have had them both. But whatever, they're gone. That's fine. But I'm concerned about this offensive line because that's physical shit, man. It's not really technique and scheming. You either block somebody or you don't. You know what I'm saying? Like, is this something for you going forward? I mean, I know I almost said as a Bills fan, you're not really a Bills fan. You're a Bills watcher and observer who lives in the area. Which I like that though, because you're a football fan.
I'm not a football
fan.
Dummy, you know?
Right. And you're going to have a more objective opinion than somebody who I think who is an admitted Bills fan and podcaster who's going to always defend them. And that's one of the reasons why I like having you on the show. But anyway, you look at this offensive line. Do you feel like, hey, just a bad game, couple bad games, or are they in trouble because of this offensive line?
This isn't just one or two bad games. This is like four or five bad games for the O-line. Yeah. Like I think there's like two games where the O-line really stepped up. And one was the Kansas City game, which, as we've seen from Kansas City's defense, might not be that big of an accomplishment to step up on them. So I would be really concerned because I think what we saw against Jacksonville was you saw rookie year Josh Allen come roaring back, and that's because he was running for his life. And I also believe he was told not to take off running either because the backup was Davis Webb, because both Trubisky and Fromm were on the COVID list.
Yeah.
So you get your backup as the number four quarterback. Like, you don't want to risk running around in the way the Jags were hitting guys. Like, and they weren't hitting dirty. They were hitting hard.
He had no choice. He was running for a
couple of times. He just had to take off.
You're right. There were no design runs. Like, you know, we've been watching a lot of Josh Allen led the Bills with rushing. He had 50 yards, but they weren't like quarterback design sneaks. So you're 100% right. Like, he was literally running for his life. The only conversions they made on third down seemed to be Josh Allen with his legs.
Yeah,
man. It's a problem, and
And I'll say that, like, I knock Dable for this because I think it's kind of cheesy, but like every time the offense starts to sputter, he calls a few of those design runs for Allen just to loosen up the other team's defense, to kind of put it in their brain, like, no, this guy can run. And he didn't do that this time. And that's why it's in my mind. Like, they were just like, we're not forcing him to run at all because we don't want to risk it. Like, I mean, which it's kind of always been my point on Allen. Like, why are you risking him? Like, don't do dumb crap like this. Like, just leave it. Let him throw the ball. Like, he's got the arm. Let him throw the ball. But like, if he ain't got time and he's got guys bearing down on him every play, I mean, I'll give credit to Jacksonville's Josh Allen. He had the game of his friggin' life.
Yeah,
that dude was everywhere. He was incredible. And
defensive player of the week.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like, I don't know. I remember covering a game when Jacksonville was in Buffalo and Telvin Smith had like the game of his life and went off on Buffalo. And I was just like, you know, Telvin Smith. I'm like, oh, he's actually good. And then he also like lit up. I mean, granted, Bills then not good. So it's understandable. But the troubles that he had, though, was a lot of like, you know, the bad passes, the bad, you know, bad decisions, bad reads, all that stuff. Like, very hesitant. And like, you know, and his bailout in the first half, it seemed like it was dumping it off to Beasley, which it makes sense makes sense to do because somebody's going to be open. You know, they played zone on him all day. Somebody's going to get open.
Yeah.
But he had like what, 8 catches for 33 yards. Like,
yeah, he was like a running back. It was like running the ball on first down, basically.
People were bitching and complaining about how like, oh, Bill's got to run more. It's like, no, they literally have like the worst run game in the NFL. Like, you don't run more. You have to like pick your moments. You have to choose when to do it. And if you got to throw short passes to do it, well, that's the West Coast offense, man. Like that's how you got to do it. And like, that's how they tried to, but then, you know, Beasley drops a couple balls. Gabe Davis drops a couple balls. They didn't throw to Diggs once. Like, they threw him to him twice in the first half for like 20 yards. Like, okay. And then they finally found him in the fourth quarter. And then Jackson was like, all right, he's here. Cool. Let's make sure we don't let him run free again. So, you know, when you get outsmarted by a 1-9, you know, 1-whatever team they are, that's not cool, man. Like that would make me worry a lot. But you know what? I don't know if this is like part of the acceptance thing, but like everybody in the AFC is greatly flawed. But the thing about Buffalo that worries me, what of their wins is actually impressive? Which victory do they have where you're just like, yeah, that sets the tone? Like, Kansas City was that game, but now it's not, because Kansas City beats Green Bay without Rodgers. But like, that was one of the worst games I've ever watched in my life. Well, second worst that week, because it was second only to Buffalo Jacksonville, which was the worst game I watched all week. But like,
right.
But I mean, like, what win of the Buffalo's are you saying like, yeah, no, that proves to me that they got it. Like, none of them stand out. Like, Pittsburgh, we thought was a horrible loss. Now it's like, maybe it's not that bad of a loss, but it's still bad. You know, Tennessee are just kind of like, Tennessee's annoying. Like, that's an annoying loss, but like, Tennessee's now the best team in the AFC. So like, I don't know, maybe that's okay. And then you lose to Jacksonville. And it's like, all right, time to worry. Like, time to get something figured out here, because either you got to not necessarily change up a scheme, but like, just change up how you attack the game.
I've spent way too much time, and I think a lot of Bills media people, podcasters, etc. This is one of those games to me where I refuse to overanalyze it. Yes, the running game is really bad. Yes, wide receivers seem like they're not getting open as much. There's lots of things to discuss, and they're worthy topics. But to me, it starts and it ends with the offensive line. I keep going back to it. If you block Josh, if you give Josh Allen time, he's going to destroy a defense. I don't care what defense it is. Name a defense in the NFL. You give the guy adequate time, he's going to make plays. Okay? I'm very confident in that. However, what I saw on Sunday wasn't really an abomination, man. It wasn't an exception. It's been the norm this year, and that's blocking issues. And what concerns me is the Bills consciously this offseason chose continuity with the offensive line. They said Cody Ford was hurt last year. He'll be back. And they liked what they had from Darrell Williams at right tackle. They gave Dawkins a lot of money at left tackle. They brought Mitch Morse back at center, who, by the way, has been the one good player, consistent player on the line this entire season so far. They chose to not do anything. They didn't take a guard in the draft. They went defensive end, then they came back with another defensive end. Instead of maybe they could have took a guard, an interior guy, in the second round. They didn't. They took tackle with their next two picks, which is, and then at the trade deadline. The most annoying thing, we use Dabda. I'm still all the way back at the anger stage that this game happened a week too late. If this game happened a week before, Brandon Bean's got to look at the film. He's got to be like, yo, we got to go out and we got to get a guard before Tuesday's trade deadline. They didn't do that. So they're stuck with what they have now. There's not answers there. They got to find a combination or something that works eternally. And the craziest part of this, Joe, to me, is Spencer Brown was a third-round pick, a project guy who was expected to eventually, ultimately become the Bills' starting right tackle down the road. He's not only a starter now, he's a critical part of this line because he's been gone for 2 weeks with the back that he hurt training during the bye week, and he hasn't played the last 2 weeks. That's made Darrell Williams, who was playing decent right guard, slide back out to right tackle, who, by the way, last year, Darrell Williams was a good right tackle. This year, he's been freaking trash. He's been horrible at right tackle. Deion Dawkins, for whatever reason, I know COVID was a factor early, but I feel like I don't feel like that's a factor anymore because he's had some good games. He's been horrible. Cody Ford is Cody Ford. He shouldn't be playing. He shouldn't even be on the roster, but he is. And Ike Bakker, you know, that's just is not good enough. And it took two injuries. John Feliciano, who I don't think is very good to begin with. However, I do think he's better than Ford or Bakker and sort of the Bills. And Spencer Brown, it's a critical piece, man. These guys go down. Where's the solution is what I'm getting at here. I don't see it.
The part that of everything you said that would worry me the most is that Spencer Brown is a critical piece.
He is. He absolutely is, though.
A guy that is a third round pick project guy is your critical piece. That is a damning statement on the entire line.
It is.
I don't know how you can look. I mean, like, yeah, okay, he's played great in, you know, when he's been in there, but like, you needed that guy to play great to kind of put your line back together. Like, Jesus. Like, I don't know how you look at that and then say, like, no, the line's fine. The line's fine outside. Like, you can't look at that and go, no, the line's not fine. And, you know, the easy thing to point out is to say, like, well, they can't run. Well, who cares? Running's not the thing in the NFL. It doesn't matter. But if your quarterback ain't got the time and it's not allowing the receivers to get free, and you got to turn all your routes into like comeback routes or like stop shorts just so that, you know, so everything becomes like a hot route for Allen. That's no good. That is the kind of stuff that you have go on if you're a team that makes the playoffs and loses in their first game.
Don't count New Yo. By the way,
no, I am counting out New England. They're not good.
Don't count them out. You're making a mistake.
I know you're scarred from multiple years of the Patriots being good. Nah, they stink. No, they're not good.
I'm telling you,
unless Mac Jones puts everybody in the Kurt Angle ankle lock every game, where you know he's just ripping guys' feet off, then okay, maybe they'll win that way. But
I think they're playing pretty well. I think they got a good defense. I think they can run the football. They're only look like it or not. You might ultimately be right. We'll find out soon enough because the Bills play them twice, so we'll find out. But and New England has a tough schedule down the road. But right now, as we talk and as we put this out on Friday, the New England Patriots are a half game behind the Bills, and they play the Buffalo Bills not once, but twice. So whether we like it or whether we don't like it, all the talk has been about the Buffalo Bills winning top seed in the AFC East. Or not the AFC East, the entire conference. And that's still on the table, by the way. I mean, as of right now, well, technically they're two games behind Tennessee because they're one behind, plus they lost to them. Tennessee and Baltimore right now, and this changes weekly because AFCs, there's a lot of parity. But right now, as we tape this today, Baltimore and Tennessee to me are the class of the AFC. Now, that could change quickly. Probably will with Tennessee, with Derrick Henry. I'm not sure how sustainable they'll be. Plus, I thought they were overrated to begin with. You and I talked about that during our season preview. But right now, give them their due. They're at the top. So the Bills are still in play for getting top record in the AFC. The Bills are very capable of going on winning out. All right, so they could finish 14-3 or 13-4, and maybe that's good enough to get it done. I don't know. But I will tell you this, as of right now, don't count the Patriots out. 5-4. They're there. They're there. They deserve to be in the discussion. Right now, before the Bills worry about getting top seed in the AFC, which, by the way, you know, only the top seed gets a bye and used to be the top two now because it's an extra playoff team. Until otherwise, you better worry about the AFC East first. I think it's a mistake to not even really be concerned about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the defense, and to me, I think that's an important point to stress on the Patriots, because what they had last season, they had what, three guys sit out because they were like, we're not playing, COVID's too big a deal, and it was like what, three starters off their defense, just like we're not playing this year, forget it. And then the Patriots defense was horrible. The Patriots were horrible last year. Like they couldn't block, they couldn't defend, they couldn't do anything, and everybody was very eager to heap lots of dirt on the Patriots and thinking like, well, Belichick's lost his quarterback, he's lost everything, now he's done, like he's gonna be out of football in a year. And it's like, well, let's wait a second. let's wait a second. So it gets those guys back on defense, and suddenly the defense is good again. Like, weird. That's weird. They got three important guys back. That's funny. That's funny how the defense is good again. And, you know, they get a quarterback that I assume Belichick loves in Jones. Like, that's the guy he wanted. So, okay. And yeah, but that's still not a good team. Like, I know New England in the past has been good about like taking not necessarily spare parts, but like guys you wouldn't think of as top guys on a good team and putting them to work and making them that way. But man, oh man, I find it so hard to believe that the Patriots can be for real. I think where the Patriots could take advantage is where everybody's got a fatal flaw in the AFC.
Everybody, I don't think they're as good as Buffalo, Joe. I don't know. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh no. I don't believe that either. But like, I mean, they're half game out. Like, so what? Like, you know, like the Bills are going to, they should sweep the Jets and the Dolphins. Like, they've already swept the Dolphins, right? So,
yep,
so they got to sweep the Jets
twice. Yep.
And so, like, I mean, they're going to see him Sunday. So I don't know, the one place where the Jets ever hulk up is at home. So we'll see if that happens again. Josh Johnson suddenly a god at quarterback. So that's weird. But I mean, like, you know, they should beat the Patriots. They should. Like, that shouldn't be an issue. But if the line plays like that, like everybody, I can't imagine what this place, by this place, I mean Buffalo, is going to be like if, you know, after the first game of the Patriots, they lose to New England, what the fatalisticness of everything is going to be here. Or if it's going to be people being like, we're supposed to be 14-2. We're going to win the Super Bowl. Or if it's just going to be everybody being like, this is why we don't believe in good things. I don't like, you know, football's bad. I hate football. I hate sport. Like, I want to know how people are going to take that from being like the presumptive number one team in the AFC to being, uh-oh. Like, to having like that big uh-oh moment. I think the Jacksonville game is a big uh-oh moment because it highlighted all the flaws that they have. But if you lose the New England game, if you lose one game, the first game in New England,
which would be in Buffalo, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't expect that to happen. Again, I think the Bills are the Bills are a better football team than the New England Patriots on paper, certainly for sure. My only point was you got to at least put New England in consideration at this time. 3-4 weeks from now, we might be laughing at that statement because, again, the Bills do play them twice, and New England does have a tough schedule. New England's got to play the Browns. In fact, they played the Browns this week. I think the Browns are a good team. They're at Atlanta, who's been better. Tennessee, they got to play. They played the Bills twice, like I said. They're at Indy. So the Bills play Indy and Atlanta, too, but both games are in Buffalo, whereas New England's on the road for both of them. Their schedule ends pretty soft, though. They got Jacksonville and Miami to end. The Bills, conversely, got Atlanta and the Jets at home. I expect the Bills to win the conference or division. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they deserve to be there. If the Bills, this year, for the Bills to be anything more than, say, a 12-5 team that wins the AFC East and loses in the first round of the playoffs, Josh Allen has to play at a level that he did last year, which is how he's doing this year could be debatable. I think he's been good. I don't think the Jacksonville game, although he made some ugly, horrible turnovers. Again, I think he was pressing and playing hero ball. because he knew the line wasn't going to block anybody. So he pressed. All right. Which, again, the line is a problem. I think Josh Allen's a good quarterback. I think he's a great quarterback. But he's not been, and this annoys me too, the national media is still like the halfway point. They're talking about who's been MVP this year, and they put out a bunch of graphics. And Josh Allen's like one of the five or six people pictured. Josh Allen is not a top five or six MVP player through the first half of the season. He's had too many shitty moments. I mean, he did not play well against Jacksonville. He didn't play well in either first half against Miami. He didn't play good against Pittsburgh. So, again, there's a lot of room for his stats look the same. Like Joe from Queens put out the stats that they're identical. I don't give a shit. He's not been as good as he was last year. But I blame the offensive line, the majority of it, on the offensive line. Anyway, my point is the Bills defense is great, but they ain't going nowhere beyond maybe winning the division unless Josh Allen plays at an MVP level. He's going to have to because this offensive line is just not good, Joe, and they're not going to get much better.
Yeah, and just to reiterate on New England, I don't want to make it sound like I'm putting them down or building them up. I'm just saying if it's a buy or sell segment on New England, I'm not buying. I'm very not fair. Selling, but I'm not buying. Like
very
I'm,
fair.
I'm sitting around I'm the guy waiting for the sale to happen before, you know, like trying to anticipate like when's the right time to make the move on them because I refuse to buy on them because I still don't believe they're very good, but I ain't selling on them because back of your mind, it's always a Belichick team and you're always thinking like, uh-oh, the old demons start coming back and you're just like, oh man, not again. Like, that's the whole thing.
It's fair. And you look at their losses, New England this year, and they lost to the Saints, they lost to Tampa Bay, and they lost in overtime to Dallas. So they've played good teams, and they got good teams left to play. Again, advantage Bills, but just let's not, you can't discount them. As long as they're there with the record-wise, and we are at the halfway point, it's not like we're only three games into the season. So, you know, the Bills, look, I was on, so last Saturday I was at Resurgence Brewery. And I did a show, one of the rumbling shows with Jay Spence, and it was a panel. A couple of the Bills Mafia babes were on it. Nate Geary was on it, and they were talking about the Jacksonville game. Like it was a foregone conclusion. Nate, my man, Nate, I got to call him out a little bit here. He didn't even want to talk about that game. He goes, let's just talk about the next month after that with the Bills. And we found out, man, we found out any given Sunday is a legit thing. So I refuse to sit here. And by the way, Mike White is starting. He's back, so he's healthy.
Oh, okay.
And he's playing for the Jets this week. I certainly don't think the New Jersey Jets are going to beat the Bills. I don't think that. But we saw with our own eyes last week, man. It could happen, all right? So, but let's assume they beat the Jets. To me, that stretch after that for the next month for the Bills is big. They got Indy at home. They're at the Saints Thanksgiving night. The Saints don't have a quarterback, but they got a pretty talented team. Then they got the Colts, a team that I like more than what their record indicates, in Buffalo. And then, of course, the New England game, man. The New England game. So they got Indy, New Orleans, New England, which I believe is a Monday night game at home. It is. And then they're at Tampa Bay. That's a tough stretch. They could be anyway after the Jets. Colts at Saints, New England at home, and at Tampa Bay. Now, that's going to tell you a lot about this team, which, again, I'm beating the drum to death because I'm going to keep beating this drum. Spencer Brown needs to get back. I'm not sure what's going on with Feliciano, how long he's going to be out. But I think they can live with Eichbacher at left guard. I don't think John Feliciano is head and shoulders above Eichbacher. But they need Spencer Brown at right tackle because they need Darrell Williams at right guard. Something's got to give there. The line has to be better. It's got to be better.
Yeah. They of all the teams that need the line to absolutely be good, I mean, every team needs that. The Bills really need that because if you give Allen just a couple more seconds, it gives all the receivers a chance to get open because we've seen what happens when he's got the time. Like two, three guys get open and that's how they roll.
I've lost zero confidence in Josh Allen. Zero. Less than zero confidence in Josh Allen. If you're one of those critics out there who are saying, well, he got his money and now he's regressing, you're a fucking idiot.
No.
It ain't got nothing to do with his contract. It ain't got nothing to do with the receivers not being good, none of that bullshit. It starts and it ends. Give him some time. Patrick Mahomes, although this year has been a different story, I don't know what's going on with some of these turnovers, these brain farts. He looks like 2018 or 2019 Josh Allen. Great plays and idiot turnovers. That's been Mahomes all year. But anyway, the Super Bowl last year, He wasn't making those mistakes last year, but he had no choice but to run for his life and try to make things happen in that Tampa Bay Super Bowl because nobody could block for him. That's what I'm starting to see with the Bills. And Jacksonville wasn't even, dude, Jacksonville wasn't even bringing the house. They weren't even blitzing that much. It was basically four guys. Occasionally they bring one blitz, just beating man to man, just beating the hell out of the Bills offensive line like a drum, man, like a drum. I don't know.
You're still very much in the angry stage.
I went from
you've
depression.
Accepted nothing.
I have not accepted anything. I have accepted something. Good segue to the break. And then on the other side, we're going to talk Sabres. I've accepted that the Sabres are going to be pretty much what we all thought they were going to be going into the season. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm not telling you to hit that 30-second button, but I'm not telling you not to on these ads. But anyway, quick break. On the other side, Joe Yurden and I are going to talk some Sabres.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, thanks for not hitting that 30-second button here to jump ahead of those ads. I hope you really enjoyed them. I'm back with Joe Yurden. All right, seriously. So the Buffalo Sabres, last week, it was it all seemed to happen so fast, even though we knew it was coming forever. Jack Eichel got traded. Mm. That was on a Wednesday, right? It was a Wednesday? Or was it a Thursday? It was a Thursday morning. So it was Thursday morning because we immediately did the emergency.
We doubled up. Yes.
We doubled up, and then we taped casual Friday after that. That was kind of like, we really didn't have any time to reflect. It was kind of like on the fly thoughts. We're not going to rehash all the details and stuff because we've done that a lot. I will say one observation before we talk Sabres here. Jack Eichel looks to me like in the interviews that I saw, which were obviously were conflicting, but just other videos of him arriving in Vegas and the treatment he got, it looks to me like he's had more smiles and more fun in like his first 72 hours of being in Vegas than he probably had in the first 4 or 5 years in Buffalo combined, you know? And again, look, it's not to say that Jack didn't try hard to enjoy Buffalo as much as he can. And it's not like he didn't give back to the community and organizations and stuff like that, because he did. Mm-hmm. It's just, you could tell that the weight has been lifted off his shoulders. Doesn't he look like the happiest guy in the face of this earth right now to you?
Yeah. And I think just like rolling into Vegas and all the sights that Vegas provides would be enough to be like, whoa, okay, this is going to be different. But I keep thinking of the video. I remember I shared it on Twitter of him showing up at the hotel, and like Vegas rolled out the corny Vegas red carpet for him with the mascot and the guy in the night outfit and the drum line and the showgirl dancers and everything, and they're doing all this stuff, and like it's like kind of overwhelming Jack as he pulls up, and the shot of Jack turning around going like, are they serious? Like he's like turning around looking behind him. He's like, wow, I cannot believe this. Like, yeah, man, different world, totally different world. And the fact that Jack, like, think of it, like, I didn't, you know, even though I knew it, but never realized it. He's like, I never lived any further west than Michigan before when he was at the U.S. program. And I was like, oh yeah, like that's a big deal. That's a big change too. Like going out west and like you're moving out west and then you're moving to Vegas. Like, and you've got a lot of money in the bank and you're an extremely talented hockey player and you're going in for neck surgery in a week. So it's like, ooh, it's a lot. Like that's a lot to deal with, but man, oh man, they've gone ham and trying to treat him. Like that's what you do. Like that's what you do for players. Like, especially somebody who you're immediately putting in your top line with your other two great players. Like that's what you do for guys like that. But man, it's such a change. Like, I can't imagine if tomorrow I got a call from somebody in Vegas being like, we're offering you a full-time job. Come out in a week. I'm like, oh shit. Like, okay. Like that's like, holy crap. I don't know how this is going to work. And then you get there and you're like, oh yeah, this is going to work fine. This will be fine. Like, you just get like, you immediately are just like, oh, this is completely different. And this feels a lot more fun. Cool.
Now when the trade happened again, we kind of reacted on the fly and we were taping right then. Didn't really get a chance to even see much of the fan interaction and reaction, but a week later, I would say predictably, and I don't want to speak for all fans because it's not the case with all fans, but by and large, anyway, on Facebook and Twitter, at least, and people that I've talked to, they shit on Jack on the way out, which, I mean, that doesn't surprise you. I don't think it's right, and I disagree with it. I've said this many, many times. If you or I were Jack Eichel, I'd be fucking miserable too, man. I'd be miserable as hell being in an organization and was never seemed committed to winning that just made horrible personnel decisions, and we don't need to rehash all them. But right. I would be miserable too, man, because I'd be frustrated. I'm an elite player and I want to win, and you're not putting me in a position to win, not to mention the injury and how it was handled. But anyway, are you surprised at all that, or maybe you don't see what I see. Maybe you see it differently. I see, by and large, again, a large majority of fans kind of shitting on him on his way out. Did you kind of feel like you saw the same? And what do you think of that?
Yeah, I could see that coming. Like there was, you know, I mean, the whole thing dragged on so long that people were already past it. They were already over it. And a lot of people have, you know, preemptively blamed Jack for everything that ailed the team. Like, you know, I was like, listen, you don't have to move any further than the owner's box to see like where all the faults lie with this. Like that's as far as you need to go. But then a lot of people get like, well, everything's good with the Bills. I don't understand. It's just like, listen, things are handled very, very differently. Very differently over down at Knox Plaza as compared to what, you know, OBD. So like let's stay away from that stuff. But like I get it. Like people are mad because listen, the fans got told like this was the guy that was gonna turn it all around. You know, they dumped a whole season to get either him or McDavid, and people were just like, well, they only did it for McDavid. It's like, no, they did it for one of the two. Like that was the whole point. Like you don't dump a whole season just because you're taking because you want a 20% chance at one dude. Like you're doing it because you have 100% chance of getting either of them. Like that was the whole point. And you know, it didn't work. And we know where the fault lies with that, but Jack's going to take the heat because he is the player. He didn't score as much as McDavid. He didn't do as much as, you know, he didn't do all the things McDavid did, even though, you know, it's a ridiculous comparison because literally nobody is Connor McDavid. Nobody. Even Sidney Crosby now is probably close to it is now, but like Crosby's like what, 33, 34?
Yeah.
Which makes me feel ancient saying that. Like, it's like, he can't be that old. Yeah, no, he is. Like, that's how old he is. But like, It's always been unfair from that standpoint, but like, I get it. I don't agree with it in any way. Like I agree with it in zero way, but I understand it. Like that's kind of crappy for it to be that way, to know that fans are going to be that way. And like, I know like the first time he comes back to play here, people are going to be shitting on him. They're going to be booing. They're going to do all that stuff. And it's like, okay, but like,
I hope not. You're right.
It's going to happen.
You're right. I know you're right. I hope not, man. I don't know. I'm just, I'm Team Jack. I've always been Team Jack in this whole mess. I really, truly feel had they done a better job, had they not traded Ryan O'Reilly, or even beyond that, had they just made better personnel moves over the last 3-4 years, and this team was any sort of contender, I think Jack would have really embraced being here a lot more, man. And, you know, it's just it's sad to see. Now, on the ice, things were, you know, they started great, 5-1-1 in their first seven, but they've crashed to earth. And I don't know. Yep. I don't see. I know you're not going to be. I'm not going to bother asking you if you're surprised. I don't think many Sabres fans are either, but they've left the ice losers in their, I think their last five. Now four of those five are in regulation. So they've only gotten, what, 1 point in their last five games out of a possible 10. So the shine is officially off this Cinderella start. But again, I mean, you're not really surprised, are you?
No. It was going to come at some point. It was just a matter of when.
It was fun though.
Oh yeah. No, it was great. Like,
it's a fun ride for seven games.
Sure. Like, yeah, listen, I tried to make it very clear to people right off the bat when this started. I was like, enjoy it for what it is, because this, like, it is what it is. Have fun with it. Like, just soak it in and just be like, hey, cool. Things are going good. I like it. That's fine. Because the ride's going to end at some point in the near future. And like, I felt like I was being a dickhead saying stuff like that. I was like, listen, reality's going to come and slap you sooner than not. Would you rather hear it from reality, or would you rather hear it from me? Would you, like, you want to be caught off guard by it and just be, I can't believe this happened. Or just have it from me and be like, be ready for this. Like, it's coming. It's going to happen. The goaltending's not going to play at a 945 rate all season long. They're not going to score, like, they're not going to score goals, like, you know, out of the blue like that all the time. Like, it's just not.
You mean Kyle Okposo and Zegras Gergesen aren't going to continue to pump pucks in the net on a regular basis? I will
crazy
say this.
Thought. Right.
Crazy. Let's be fair though, Joe. Let's be fair to the fans. Let's be fair to the optimists out there. They're very thin on talent to begin with going into the season, and you lose your Casey Mittelstadt, who's your number one center right off the bat. They've been without Olofsson for a while, who I think is probably their most established goal scorer. Mm-hmm. And then Joki Aro's been gone. I think he got hurt, what, opening night, right?
Yeah, was it an opening night? Him and Mittelstadt both got hurt.
Opening night. I mean, so that's one half of their defensive pair last year anyway. That was their best defensive pair, and him and Dahlin. So, I mean, a team that's thin to begin with, that's a big ask for this team to overcome that, man. It's tough. But here's what I want to do. And I've asked you to be a salesperson before. I'm not really asking to be a salesperson right now. I'm asking to be an analyst, all right?
Okay.
I was looking today, Thursday morning, again, before we started taping this, Lance Lazowski posts the Sabres lines, like he does at every practice. And it was Thompson, Asplund, Skinner, Eakin, Okposo, Gergensen, Cousins with Stroza and Kags. And then it was Bjork, Ruustalainen, and Hayden. I'm like, ugh. But then I'm thinking in my mind, I'm like, all right, well, that's not good, obviously. Oh, defensive pairings, by the way. Dahlin and Pesek, Bryson and Miller, Butcher and Hag. I'm like, ugh. But then I'm like, there's six guys that are not on that ice right now, today. And I'm thinking in my mind that sometime soon, if not at the latest next year, they're going to be on this team. You got Mittelstadt, which you already talked about. Tuck, which they got in the trade. Olofsson, who's hurt, he'll be back. And then you got Krebs, and then you got Quinn, and you got Paterka. That's six forwards. That's literally half your four lines right there that are not on the ice that will be there sometime the next year. And then you got Owen Power and Samuelson, you know, who I would say next year probably are both going to be, in Samuelson's case, probably before that. But, you know, there's help is on the way. Would you agree that? I don't mind asking you to be a salesperson. Yeah, hey, you're rah, 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 rah. Because you never know how it's going to work out. But even as an analyst, you got to agree. Like, if you want to be an optimist with the Sabres right now, I feel like legit help, at least potentially anyway, certainly is on its way, right?
Yeah. No, I look at the start that both Quinn and Paterka have had in Rochester, and that's extremely encouraging.
Sure.
Like, that's highly encouraging, because Quinn's start is not expected, I think, on anybody's part. I mean, he was, what, 18, 19 last year, forced to play in the AHL because the OHL, you know, shut down for a year. And so he got the chance to play here, and he struggled. Like, the AHL is an extremely difficult league. Like, it's a rough and tumble league. It's an older league, and there's a lot of veteran know-how that you got to put up with. And like, if you're 18, 19 playing in that, man, that's freaking hard. That's a really hard way to play. And we saw in the past with with Alex Nylander, like, he struggled terribly in Rochester. And the unfortunate part there was that the veteran group around him wasn't very supportive. I think that's much different this time around. Like, they've got a very development oriented coaching staff there, and the staff in general. I mean, you got Weber and you got Mike Pekka down there. Like those guys, you want to learn from those guys. You know, like, you know, Weber is the perfect guy for the defenseman to learn from. Pekka is a great guy for all the forwards to learn from. Like those are who you want to have down there, like to teach them. But you add Krebs into that mix, and I'm very eager to see if Seth Appert puts Krebs with Paterka and Quinn to see if they just load up one line and say, all right, boys, figure out the chemistry and let's roll. I mean, he's still trying to figure out what he's going to, you know, where Krebs is going to like totally fit in, because he doesn't want to just throw it together immediately and just like force it to happen. You don't want to do that. But I'll be very anxious to see when that happens and how it works together, because that immediately makes me start thinking of the 05-06 Sabres that came up after the lockout. The Amerks that year in 2004 were like probably one of the best Amerks teams in recent history, where they had Pominville, you had Vanek, and you had Derek Roy, and those guys, like those three guys graduated up immediately and were instantly like top six guys, like with Briere and with Drury. Like that immediately put you on notice, like, oh, right, we've got a lot of talent here. So I'm going to be really curious to see how that works. And you know what? People are going to want to see him in Buffalo. No. Let him play in Rochester as much as humanly possible. Like, let him get it figured out. Same goes for Luukkonen. Same goes for Oskari Laaksonen, and another defenseman down there. Like, they're kind of loaded up on defense right now. Like, at least guys that are going to hold down the spots now. Like, after the trade deadline, if you trade Robert Hagg someplace or Will Butcher someplace, cool. Bring up Samuelson. Bring up Laaksonen and see what you got there. But until then, I wouldn't touch a single guy in Rochester. A single young guy in Rochester, I wouldn't move him up once.
You would unless, have Krebs. What about Krebs? Would you have him play in Rochester this whole season? Barring injuries?
Maybe not all season. Maybe not all season for him, because he does have some NHL experience already. He's already had time in the AHL. Like, you should already have a good idea what he's about, but you got to get him acclimated. I get it. Get him used to what they want him to do with the team and all that. If he stays down there all year, that's not a loss as far as I'm concerned. Like, if he's there playing with Paterka and Quinn and getting ice time with those guys and bonding with them, fine.
That could be a future bubble line next season.
Like, yeah. Literally, that could be one of your lines next season, which cool. Like that's kind of what you're kind of hoping to develop here. So I don't really want to see any of the young guys from Rochester up here being forced up here. Like, well, they keep getting points, we better put them in the NHL, and like immediately throw them into a top six role. And if they're not cutting it, then like, oh geez, we don't know what's going on here. Let's put them with the third and fourth line. Let's see how that works. Like, no. Don't do any of basically it's like it's George on Seinfeld. Do the opposite of whatever you would have done before and have success. Like, that's what the Sabres mindset has to be. What would we have done in the past? We would have done this. Okay, do the opposite of that. Don't do anything that you would have done before, because what you've done before has done nothing but fail and not work. So do the opposite. Let those guys play in Rochester all year. Rochester fans be excited. Like, Rochester fans are, you think Sabres fans are pissy and grumpy. Holy shit. Say anything about the Amerks, you'll have a cavalcade of Amerks fans coming out of nowhere to be like, you don't know what you're talking about. Blah, 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 blah. And like, I love the passion, but like, Jesus. Oh my God, guys. Like, chill out. Like, you're the AHL is a development league. Like, some people think it's the NHL.
I'm flirting with going to Rochester actually on Saturday that they play at home.
No,
and
go check it out, man.
I'm considering going to actually go check them out. But anyway, yeah, so that does, at least there's potential for promise in the future. There's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. If you want to find some light, you could find it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for reasons and motivation to keep yourself going, because man, look, in one offseason, they fucking lose Sam. They don't bring Ullmark back. They just traded their franchise center. There's lots of reasons to jump off this ship. If you want to stay on, you're looking for some light, you know, that's it. Now, this present team, look, I'm not frustrated. I'm not angry. I'm unlike the Bills, you know, because my expectation was that they weren't going to be good. So I'm still, even though they're not winning, I'm looking for bright spots. And I think I found two of them that I really like. And we talked about Dolly last week. Nothing's really changed. So we'll skip over him for this week. But two guys I like is Asplin. I think he's one of those guys who there's no one trait about him that just jumps off the chart. But he's getting an opportunity to skate on a prominent line, and he's taking advantage of his opportunity. I like that. He's got 10 points already. And then, You know, now granted, I don't watch every shift of every game. I admit that. I've never tried to lie about it. But it seems to me like every time I'm watching Tage Thompson, it seems like he's playing well. Like he's doing something good. If you want to say forget about the future, I only care about right now, to me those are two guys that are playing well and give you a lot of hope about right now. You agree?
Yeah, no, I agree completely there. Asplund, I like to pat myself on the back when it comes to Asplund, because when they made that trade to move up to get him, and that was the trade where they sent Mark Pesek to Florida and got Dmitry Kulikov, and they moved up to like, what, 32nd, 33rd to pick Asplund because they really wanted him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, the height of their Swedish, you know, they started really loving the Swedes and everything, but they moved up to get him. And I was like, this dude's going to be pretty good. And, you know, he did pretty good in Rochester. He was he's all right in Rochester. And then he came up here like the last couple of years, people were just like, what the hell is this guy's deal? Like, he's not really working out. It's not doing well. He's putting on the fourth line. He's doing all this stuff. Like, it's like, I don't know, man, like give him some other stuff to do other than just like here, try to defend. Okay, good luck. Like that was kind of the directions they gave him. And it made him kind of listless. Like they didn't decide whether he was a winger or center. And he like kept going back and forth between the two. So you didn't know. So now last season, they kind of figured it out. I think Granato figured it out. It wasn't Ralph Kruger that figured it out. Let's make that very clear. It was not Ralph that figured it out. It was definitely Granato that figured out how best to use him. And it's let him forecheck like crazy. Let him get up in everybody else's kitchen and let him hang around the net. Like that dude, just everything he does is like around the net and net front, does a ton of that stuff. And he's able to be really effective at it. And I've been a big supporter of his for a while. And some of my other pals were not. They very decidedly were not big supporters of his. And they're just like, you're crazy. I'm like, well, give him time. Like, give him an opportunity. Like, let's see what he can actually do. He's doing pretty good. And you know what? A big part of that is Tage. Tage is his centerman, which, holy crap, he's playing center. He hadn't played center since you know before the U.S. program, going back before he was at UConn. So I mean, it'd been a while, and he's the way he plays center makes it so that it opens things up for guys like Olofsson and Asplund to do other stuff, because instead of being like a dangler and trying to like fake guys out of their skates and you know carry the puck and fool people with doing that, he's doing straight line stuff. He's driving the net. You know, lagging back his wingers, the wingers take it to the net, and he's right there to hop on rebounds and do that stuff. Like it sounds so easy when you say playing center is kind of like that, but like they've made it so they've simplified the game for him so much so that it makes sense and that he doesn't feel the need to have to like try to show off his skills with, you know, handling the puck and being a stick handler and all that. It's like, no, dude, you're 6'5", drive the lane, get in people's way, and then, you know, he's got the passing and the shooting ability to be able to score. So he's taken advantage of that. And it's really great to see, because the potential's always been there. And I think coaches and even the Blues are guilty of this too. They tried to make him a power forward in a build where he's, what, 6'5", and he's still pretty skinny. Like, he's strong, but like he's not like a bulky 6'5". Like, he's not like, you know, a mow you down kind of 6'5". But he's a guy that he's grown up being a skill guy his whole life, and then suddenly he was 6'5", and it's like, oh crap, I've got all these skills to do these things, and now they're trying to make me a net front, you know, push people around guy. And it's like, that's never been what he's good at. So again, this is where I give Granato the credit. Like, he's looked at these guys and said, okay, listen, I'm gonna play to your strengths instead of like, here's the system, fit it or don't, you know. Like, that to me is what is Granato's biggest credit.
Wanted to make one more Buffalo Sabres point before we wrap up with our weekly starting five draft. And that's Don Granato, the coach. And I think the Sabres are going to get it right. So I'm not saying they're going to get it wrong. But it's critical to me that no matter how bad things get record-wise over the next couple of years, they don't jump ship on Don Granato. I think they need some continuity with the head coach and the general manager, Kevin Adams, of course. Because we just spent a lot of time talking about some of these kids on the come up, you know, Krebs and Quinn and Paterka, and a lot of young guys on this team right now that are starting to, Asplund and Thompson, that are playing well under Granato. The last thing that we need is shuffling every 2 years with the coach and the GM. I mean, I think that's a big problem that happened with Jack and with Sam and with Ristolainy and Omar and some of these guys are not here anymore, man. It's I think it's really important that they stay the course. It feels like they have a plan. I mean, they just got rid of all the guys they wanted to get rid of, the guys that want to be here, they want, yada, yada, yada. Let's, again, they might, I think they're going to be competitive, but let's just say for whatever, they keep losing, the losses pile up this year, maybe even next year. Don't jump ship. Do you agree with that? Like, continuity right now, and sometimes I hate continuity. Like, when I think a team is ready to win and they're not, make changes. But this team's not ready to win, and let's make sure that they're not going to be impatient. Because that's the last thing these kids need is three coaches over the next 6 years. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
I think that was the most important part of doing a restart like this. Like, you've moved the guys out that have already been through all of that already. You know, I mean, Gergensen is still here. Opozo's been kind of, but, you know, they're veteran at this point. Gergensen's one, but, you know, Sabre survivor. Like, he's been here from the get-go.
Forever. Really.
So, I mean, like, but, like, he's a guy, like, he's a plug-and-play guy. Like, you can put him in anything and he goes. But, like, with the other guys, though, that's necessary. And it makes me think of what Colorado did with Jared Bednar. Like, they brought him in. The year they brought him in was the year they finished with, like, 48 points. They ended up winning the lottery, and they draft McKinnon. And they stuck with him, and then suddenly they were great. And it was like, oh, well, yeah, okay. Like, they had a bunch of other guys that they picked and stuff, like, but they were nowhere near it. And they were just like, okay, let's just get going with it. And I think in Granato's case, like, yeah, there's no pressure. Like, they're not supposed to be a playoff team. You want them to be competitive. You want them to, you know, have some entertainment value. Done and done so far. Like, that's what's important. And you have to instill what you want to be the values in the guys that they're going to be bringing up. So this is the most hands off as far as a coach approach I think this team is ever going to have, because, you know, Adams believes in Granato. Granato's a good dude. There's no reason to press him, like, unless the team develops tons of bad habits. They end up, you know, they end up losing because of those things, and then they just go, you know, they just go absolutely off the rails. Like, there's no reason to change anything up. Like, just get them back focused, and then everything will be fine.
They can lose the next 70 games, their last 70 games, and I still don't want to see a new head coach next year.
Yeah,
I don't care if they lose 70 in a row right now.
You know what, though? That would be a record. So that's impressive enough to just keep them around.
By the way, one other thing, too. If you're a fan, and again, we spent a lot of time talking about some potential on this team. They're not playing well at right now, but they're still reasonably competitive, and there's some reasons to watch them. But even if you're not a Sabres fan, this is a good weekend to go to the arena. Tonight, Connor McDavid's coming to
visiting
town.
Teams, yes.
That goal, by the way, that goal he scored last week, that I didn't watch the game. I saw it on Twitter. I was like, holy shit, man. God, how fortune's going to change if a lottery ball just went a specific way.
Would they have, though? Because, like, Edmonton's done basically as much to surround him in talent as Buffalo has. It's just...
Fair point. He's just... You know, my point is, oh, my God, I'd love to watch him 82 times a year. That's the point I was trying to make there. But anyway... You go to the arena tonight if you're listening on Friday, and Connor McDavid is coming to town. And then tomorrow, Saturday, is basically going to be a Toronto takeover. Not the borders open.
The borders cost $300 for them to get back in the country, man.
They don't give a shit, man. They want to.
They spend that much in beers.
It'll be a fun vibe for those who are there. It's always a fun vibe when the Sabres. I almost said the Bills. I do that at least once a week when the Sabres and the Leafs play. It's usually a fun crowd, so it's a good time. It's a good weekend. You haven't been out to a game yet to get to one. Speaking of, well, actually, there is no speaking of. Let's just jump right into the starting five. Enough of fucking Sabres shit.
I was waiting for you to say that.
I'm a little salty. I'm a little bit salty about last week. So we had Adam Sandler movies. Mm-hmm. And for the second time ever, it was close. But for the second time in like 3 or 4 weeks, it was like, almost a virtual tie.
Yeah.
Joe won 51-49. Let me recap. Joe had Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison, Punch Drunk Love, Funny People, and Uncut Gems, the massively overrated Uncut Gems.
Oh my God.
I'm saying that. I'm so bitter. Oh my God. I took The Wedding Singer, The Waterboy, 51st States, Big Daddy, and Mr. Deeds. It went 51-49. You won. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I hope you're happy. It was the closest
quality
one,
than your pandering picks.
It was our closest one since, again, a couple weeks ago, we had a virtual 50-50 tie when we did 80s musical acts, which that one was awesome. I think it went how I thought it was going to go, to be honest with you. You got a lot of praise, the top two picks, a lot of, you know, you were top heavy. Your roster was very top heavy.
No, my Happy roster Gilmore. Was very thorough. Happy My roster Gilmore, was, it was very thorough. Happy I don't know Gilmore, what you're talking about.
It was. Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison, heavily praised. We saw a lot of comments where Joe got both the top two, and that got you a lot of votes. I think my strength was roster depth. I think my five was better than your five.
I
think your
completely.
Starting two was better for that reason. When I thought I was going to pull it out, man. I did. I didn't.
I'm glad you didn't, because I would not be able to survive you gloating about it, because I definitely had the superior five. You and your like I was more stunned by the number of people that were just like, I've never seen any of the movies that I picked. And I was like, what do you mean you've never seen any of the five that I picked? And they saw all the movies you picked. And I was like, how did you miss at least the first two? How do you miss those two movies? I can understand missing the other three, but like, if you missed Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, then
and
you're not.
And you watch like 50 First Dates and the Mr. D. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
Don't vote in the poll. Don't offer a comment.
Just get out of here, man.
If you haven't seen Happy Gilmore or Billy Madison, it means you just definitely don't like Adam Sandler. I always have a vision for these, and obviously my vision is quite often wrong because I'm usually on the receiving end of ass whoopings. But this week, or last week, I should say, did go how I thought it was. I honestly punched Drunk Love and Funny People and Uncut Gems. Those were ones that I didn't think they were going to. You might think so. 51% of people did. Fairness to you. But I honestly, I thought you had a very top heavy roster. And that's where the majority of your praise came from. Let's just put it that way. I got praise for being strong 1 through 5. You got praise for having the best two.
I got some praise for that. I got more praise for being like, how does Pat hate Uncut Gems? That was a big one. Because that legit movie. Is the best movie out of all 10.
No,
out
it's
of all
not.
10 that were picked. Yes, it is.
Hell out of here. No,
it
way,
is.
Man.
It absolutely, dude. I had to go watch it. I had to watch it again just to, because your shit talking it made me have to go watch it again. And I was like, did I miss something? And no, I didn't miss anything.
Was Kevin Garnett any better in that than he was the first time I watched it? You couldn't pay me to watch that movie again.
Oh my God.
I thought it was terrible, man.
If you hated it because it made you feel uncomfortable all throughout, I would understand that. Because the whole movie is uncomfortable beginning to end, because you're just waiting for the floor to get pulled, like the rug to get pulled out and him to get swallowed by sharks. Yeah. And yeah, like I would respect it. Just being flat out being like, no, it sucks. Like, come on, come on, man. Just get lost.
All right. Well, we're venturing into a category this week. Now, there were a lot of Adam Sandler movies to choose from, and there were plenty that neither of us chose that people were talking about. That's nothing compared to what's going to happen this week. I suspect strongly, because we're doing one of the most broadest categories that you could possibly do. That's best rock bands. It doesn't really need a lot of explanation there. We're drafting a starting five of bands that whether we say best, you can describe it as favorite, whatever you want to, but five rock bands that probably will resonate with people the most. Certainly five that resonate with us. Mm-hmm. So, I did go first last week and I took a controversial pick, The Wedding Singer. I don't know.
That's what cost you.
I will say this. I might have lost the poll because of my selection. However, it's one of those cases where I regret nothing. I would take The Wedding Singer again because I love that movie that much.
That makes last week's poll perfect, because neither of us will give an inch as to
exactly.
If I lost that, I would have been like, no, I don't care. Like that's those are the five that I stand by. And yeah, I know you feel the same way. So
yeah,
that's
absolutely. We'll see if we feel that way again.
Adam Sandler would be that, would get us all like punchy like that. Like Adam of all the movies, Sandler movies gets us all like, no.
Of all the categories and topics that we've done through these months to get us going at each other. I never would have guessed it would have been Adam Sandler movies, but here we are. Let's see what happens this week. So we got best rock bands, and you're up first.
Can we just get this out of the way and say that this is a category we're doing where there are at least 20 number one picks?
Easily.
Like at least 20? Like, holy cow. But I will start with the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
Because to me, that's, they're not, now granted, this is probably controversial. They're not my most favorite band. I do love the Stones, but like there's at least five others that are more, my more favorite. But like when you talk rock bands, man, people are just like, yeah, it's the Stones. Like the Stones are the ones that like seems to get everybody like kind of agree. Because there's a few others where it's kind of like, eh, I don't like this, I don't like that, or I don't like them about blah, 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 whatever. But the Stones are always number one.
All right. Fair enough. And a good pick, obviously. To me, there's two.
I don't think there's a bad pick.
Well,
we'll see.
There might be. And by the way, I should probably put this out there. Joe and I, well, we have some similar taste in music, but generally speaking, I am more of a pop rock, cheesy, mainstream R&B type of guy, where Joe is much more into the rock scene. Like Joe can run off, if you wanted to, and we were doing just personal favorite bands and did not give a shit about a poll or what people think, Joe could probably sit here and run off 50 bands that I've barely even heard of, if I've heard of them at all. So I'm not trying to pretend that my expertise in this category is as good as yours. I'm just trying to draft a better team with five picks here. All right, so my first one here, I had 1A and 1B, and Rolling Stones was one of the two, obviously. It was my 1B. I guess the only controversy, if there even isn't, is are they considered a rock band? I think they are at that time anyway. That's the Beatles. Got to take the Beatles. Yeah. To me, they're rock and roll, whatever. They weren't like, how do I say
that? They get put into the pop category just because of like everything that they did when they first came out. But like,
right. They're rock and roll, man. They're a rock band. So I don't need to explain the Beatles. The Beatles is one of my picks. And the next one, this is where it gets hard for me because again, Rolling Stones and the Beatles. So like if you were to tier, like I tier chicken wings, you know, I got a couple wings and then they drop down to tier two and then tier three. To me, Rolling Stones and the Beatles are tier one. After that, I got a bunch on tier two. I'm going to go with Queen.
Okay.
I like Queen a lot. To me, they are the best. Again, I'm not the most experienced. I'm not a rock guru, but they're the best live band that I've ever seen. I love a ton of their music. To this day, even being a teenager, I still remember how they stole Live Aid. You know, it was the best set, far and away.
Freddie melted everybody that
absolutely. So you know their longevity, their hits, just their music, and how good they were live. I'm going to go with Queen. So the Beatles and Queen.
Hard to like I said, there's at least 50 number one picks. These are all, this is like a top, this is a starting five of number one picks.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like I almost sort of mailed this in. Maybe I could have been a little more specific with this. I can guarantee you, no matter, we're going to both have good teams. People are going to vote and then we're going to get more interaction about ones that neither of us took.
The, what this allowed me to do is just write in my next two picks because, and this is not to, I'm not knocking your picks in anyway. Like it's zero way am I knocking that. I could never, I can't knock bands that I have multiple CDs of theirs. Like I can't, it's just, it's impossible. Yeah. But my next two are The Who and Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
The Who, like I give, it's a very decided like British flavor with what we're doing here. But like The Who, like were just so transformative with what they did. Cause like they made it cool to like, just kind of like, kick your amps out, smash your guitars around, play some like really crushing sound of chords and things like that. Sound like almost like a metal band, but not like nobody's really a metal band in the 60s. And then Zeppelin gets knocked because of, you know, of lifting, you know, old blues songs and doing that. But like, did you listen to stuff they didn't lift? Like, holy shit, man. Like I don't know of another band that like, that had a group that each guy did something where you're just like, holy shit. Like John Bonham is a holy shit drummer. Jimmy Page is a holy shit guitarist. Robert Plant is like, listen to his voice for God's sake. And then John Paul Jones, like everybody's like, oh yeah, the bassist guy. It's like, no, listen to all the crazy musicianship that they would do in that band. That was probably John Paul Jones responsible for it. So like that's, yeah.
Good picks.
I have all their CDs and all their stuff on vinyl. Like that's how insane I am about Zeppelin.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'll say this. And being completely honest here, I didn't have The Who in my favorites. I wasn't a huge Who fan, but again, much respect to them. Iconic rock band. Led Zeppelin was fourth. I was taking Led Zeppelin with one of my next picks. 100% was taking Led Zeppelin. I love them. All right, so I'm up with two. This is where I might start to get in trouble for taking a band too early, but again, I don't care. It's my favorite rock band of modern times. And by modern times, I'm going strictly by myself. Anything from the 80s on to me is modern. Now, again, the early 80s, you're talking about almost 40 goddamn years ago, so they're not really modern in younger people's eyes. But to me, they are. Van Halen. Van Halen, American rock band. I absolutely love them, obviously, the most. I would say 1984 to this day is in my top five probably favorite albums.
Top five?
Probably,
1984. Wow.
Yeah, I absolutely love that album from top to bottom. I love Van Halen, man.
That's not the album I would have picked though. Like if I was going to pick one, I think the first one really, like, it blows everybody's hair back. Like you get Eruption right off the hop and you're just kind of like, oh, okay. These guys are doing something completely different.
Well, they became more mainstream, I think, with 1984. And again, I'm very quick to admit, I even call myself mainstream Moran. Like, I like bands when they're already popular. Like, I didn't grow with them. But anyway, yeah, I absolutely love Van Halen. I always have. Then the other one, this is where I'm starting to get hard. It's getting hard. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. That's who I'm going to go with, man. I'm a big fan. Joe wants to laugh as I'm saying that. Yes, you do. I could tell.
You're going off the board. I like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Am I in my top 10?
That's top five. They're in my top
four.
They're
in your top five. That's
they're
right.
They're in my top four.
But like, are they even in my top 10?
Probably not. Well, the Who weren't in my top 10, so we're even there. Where would Van Halen rank on yours? Is Van Halen a top 10 for you at least?
They might be in the top 10. But like, I knew you were going to pick Van Halen because every time we do a music thing, you're trying to find a way to squeeze Van Halen into it. Like, I respect, like, you know, listen, I respect that kind of hustle to be like, listen, can I put Van Halen in here someplace? I need to find a place to put Van Halen in
if
here.
If we were listening, I'll tell you what, real quick before we get to your last two here. So we got the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Queen, the Who, Zeppelin, Tom Petty, and Van Halen. If we put on album, like say if we put on Pandora, any of those music stations, at some point I'd get kind of tired of hearing it. You put on Van Halen, you and I could sit here and drink beers for 2 hours interrupted. I would not once say, hey, you want to throw something else on? And I love these other bands. In fact, I drafted a couple before Van Halen. But Van Halen's the one group where I'm not going to tell you once to change the channel and put on something else.
You know what? Like, listen, I'm the same way. Until you get to the Sammy Hagar stuff, then I'm going to be like, all right.
Okay. Fair enough.
Like, I'm strictly in the Van Halen part, not Van Hagar. Like, that's
as I'm looking at this poll, I'm realizing I might have just conceded this.
You haven't heard my last two picks.
I was gonna say, let's see what you do, man. Let's see what you do first.
You're in trouble. My next pick is gonna be Metallica. you're in big trouble. I don't think I need to explain Metallica, honestly. Like, that's they made metal acceptable for mainstream radio, and they're great because they're very polarizing, you know, not just because of the Napster stuff, but because like they're polarizing within their own fan base, because everything, like, people just get pissed about, there's a lot of, like, people tell me like they hated the Black Album, and I'm like, wait, what's your favorite album? They're like, Master of Puppets. And okay, then there's people who like only know them from the Black Album. They're like, oh man, I love that. I love Load. That's really good. I was like, wow, okay. It takes all kinds, I guess. But yeah, no, like Metallica, like they're polarizing, but I think it's like for the most part, it's good polarizing. I think that's where they kind of fall into with that. And then my next one, I'm just like scrolling through my list here, and I feel I'm not confident enough to just punt on the last pick and pick whoever the frick I want.
I think you should be.
I kind of feel that way, but like, I don't know. I'm just like scrolling through my iTunes right here, and I'm just like, okay, who have I missed? Best bands. I gotta go.
It's tough. There's so many.
That's the thing. Like, I just want to get one that kind of like really hammer it home. Like, just really just drive the point home that, like,
I think you might have done that already.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Listen, I know not to take anything too much for granted besides, like, you know, it's an awful sound. Why did I make that sound? You know what? No. Best.
If this was the NFL draft, your clock would be running out, and then I'd have an opportunity
to take a run ahead. You could run ahead and make your last pick. Like, I'm fully going Vikings here and just being like, you know, man. You know what? I'll go. Well, this might seem. No, you know what? Let's go with Nirvana.
Okay.
You're good. That was going to be my original choice. And then I was like, well, maybe I could pick somebody else. And I was like, no, it's Nirvana. Like, Nirvana changed the game. Yeah. Like, they in one fell swoop, they changed the game to alternative being mainstream and then killed hair metal at the same time.
I'm telling you right now, you're right. And I'm laughing.
I love hair metal. Like, that's the worst part.
I'm laughing at myself because I just know where this is going, man. This is looking like one of those, 80 to 85% votes for you. I will say this, best rock, their traditional rock band. I've wanted the words Lynyrd Skynyrd to come out of my mouth, but I'm just going to be honest with you. Oh, I don't like them that much, man.
Okay.
I don't like them
that good. Freebird's
it,
a top
is,
10 song.
It is. Pink. I want to say Pink Floyd, but I don't, even though there are a couple songs I love from Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fish for votes. I'm going to try to keep this close.
Oh.
I also wanted to say Journey.
You know, I'm going to use to campaign against you right away.
I love Journey. All right. I love Journey.
Oh, man.
Can't pick them. And the one I want to take, but it will get ridiculed and it will get blasted to the end of the earth. I want to take the Eagles, but you can make a case that this should be for a yacht rock draft to take the Eagles. They are a rock band, but they're almost like, you know, it's almost like too much easy rock. Yacht rock, like I said, I think that would get hammered. I'm going to fish for votes, and I'm going to take U2. I don't even like U2. I'm going to be honest with you.
Shameless.
My only goal is to not get beat 85-15 like I did. I think it was 2 weeks ago you beat me 85-15. That was really embarrassing. I had to hide my head in shame all week, and I don't want to do that again. So I feel like U2 with the fifth round pick will give me some votes. I never usually admit to fishing for votes, but I'm totally doing that. Now, I will say this, though, in fairness, I've talked about this. I think I might have talked about this on the show. I like U2. I respect U2. They've been around forever. They've had many good albums. You could have them in best. I think you and I talked about this. Best rock groups of the 80s or 90s. You know what I mean? They span a couple decades. So it's not like I don't like them. I respect them. But they're not one of my five favorite. I'm just going to be honest with you, man. I'm just trying to keep this vote respectable. So you too.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think the middle of the draft killed you already.
I do too. That's what I'm going back. Yeah. And rounds 3 and 4 are going to be what kills me. Let's
rounds
recap. Rounds
3 and 4 seem to be your undoing. Like that middle part of the draft, you just like you unwind and you're just like, I go off the plot. And it's like,
I think what happens is rounds 1 and 2, I think I tend to pick ones that I know need to be there. Rounds 3 and 4, I take too many liberties and I start to think about myself personally too much. And ultimately that's what hurts me. Then usually round 5, I just throw the towel in. Although I didn't today with this pick. Let's recap. All right. So Joe took the Rolling Stones, the Who, Led Zeppelin, Metallica, Nirvana. What am I going to fucking pick apart? What can I possibly pick apart there? Jesus. God.
All right, you can try. I mean,
I can't.
You can try if you want to, but
I'm not going
to
sound like an idiot anymore than I already have for the last hour and 20 minutes. All right, so, and then I took the Beatles, Queen, Van Halen, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Oh, God, instant regret there. And U2. I love U2 as a pick anyway, not necessarily as band.
Like, see, I'm a huge Rush fan. Like, I'm one of the biggest Rush fans. But, like, I know the second that I say they're top five for me, like top five best rock band of all time, it's super polarizing because people are either right there with me saying, yeah, hell yeah, way to give them credit. Or they're like, I can't stand Geddy Lee's voice. Screw that band. Like that's how it always works. Cause you're never really like kind of a passing fan of Rush. You're just kind of like, yeah, they're all right, I guess. Like, yeah, I can listen to them. Like, no, you're either all in or you're not in at all. Like, that just seems to be the way it works with them. So I love them. Like, they're, if it was personal, you know, this is where if we did personal top five, that they're absolutely in there. But
yeah,
but for best rock bands like ever, can't do it.
There's a couple that I wrote down real quick here that I wanted to throw out there. Neither of us picked or mentioned. Guns N' Roses, CCR, Clearance, Clearwater Revival. It's another good one. Fleetwood Mac, another one that I think would have got me ridiculed. You know, I should have sold my soul to the devil and talked to John Worrell before this and maybe got his advice for some.
Oh, see, then you would have been picking the Replacements, you know, picks 1 through 5, and then maybe the Pretenders after that.
This summer, dive into the many cools of San Antonio, because as soon as the temperature rises, so does the fun, the flavors, the excitement, and the many cool things that make our city the perfect summer getaway destination. Come keep cool with amazing pools, the best hotels, refreshing adventures both indoor and outdoor, inspiring history and culture, culinary wonders, and the hottest nights of your life at the coolest spots in Texas. To plan the coolest summer vacation, dive into visitsanantonio.com/summer.